Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I am Judy Davis, and I'm here with my co-host, Sandy Fowler. And today, we are talking about how we as parents can actually help our kids become mentally strong. You know, Sandy, we have the best intentions at heart as moms. And sometimes I've noticed in our lives that we take responsibility for our children's lives and what they're doing. And that translates into them missing out on some key skills that they really, really need. You know, hindsight is always 20/20.
It is. It's funny, Judy, because we are going through a time period in our household where my oldest has graduated from college, and so she moved back home while she's in that job hunt phase and making adjustments and stepping into that next space in her life. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing the places we screwed up. And one of them is this taking responsibility for things in her life that I shouldn't have, you know, and I didn't do all the time, but even doing it some of the time impacts our kids. And that personal experience really makes a subject near and dear to your heart. And that's one of the things that struck me about our guest today, is that she has vast experience with today's topic on both a personal and a professional level. Her name is Amy Morin, and she has a unique background for talking to us about being mentally strong and teaching kids how to be mentally strong. She herself faced several different difficult experiences in her 20s, losing her husband to a heart attack, the death of her mother, and the death of her father-in-law, which was someone she was very close to. Then professionally, she had a degree in social work, and the work that she does in private practice, helping kids and teaching parents how to coach their kids to become mentally strong, have also, you know, built on her knowledge and her techniques and things. She's also a foster parent caring for kids who are dealing with difficult circumstances. So she's taken all of this knowledge, all of this experience personally, professionally, and put it out into the world for the rest of us, not only through her private practice, but through her internationally best-selling book, 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do. She has columns in Inc. and Forbes and Psychology Today, also on Very Well, and she shares parenting expertise there for us as well. Today, she is joining us to talk about the ideas in her latest book, 13 Things Mentally Strong Parents Don't Do. So, Amy, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on Mighty Parenting.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
You know, Amy, I'm excited about this because it's such an important topic. And I know that you did a TED Talk. And in that TED Talk, you said that bad habits cost us. And I would love for you kind of to explain that, because it's such a foundation for this whole mentally strong portion of what we're talking about.
Sure. Well, you know, we live in this world where we're bombarded with all of these things we should be doing and all the good habits you should adopt and all the things you should change. And I think for most of us, that's overwhelming. And yet we try to change something in our lives. We adopt a new habit, whether it's a new diet plan or exercise plan, or you say you're going to change something in your life. And then despite your hard work, you don't necessarily see the results that you want. And as a therapist, I was taught you should build on people's strengths, tell them what they're already doing well and build on that. But at some point I realized that people sometimes just have one or two bad habits and it keeps them stuck. They're counterproductive, that despite all of their hard work, they're doing just maybe one or two little things that are outweighing all of their good habits. And it just became clear that sometimes it's not as hard as we make it. It could be simpler. You just get rid of a few of the things that are holding you back and suddenly you can move forward. And I like to compare mental strength to physical strength, that if I wanted to become physically strong, I could go lift weights. But if I was eating a box of donuts on the drive home every day, I probably wouldn't see that much muscle definition. But if I just gave up eating too much junk food, I'd start to see results. And mental strength is the same. When you have a bad mental habit, like maybe you call yourself names or Maybe you host pity parties. It doesn't matter whether you're practicing all these other good habits, they won't work. And so that's really what a lot of my research on mental strength revealed. And now that's what I'm all about, is going around and teaching people, just stop doing these things that are keeping you stuck. And when it came to parenting, it was the same, that sometimes it only takes one or two bad parenting habits that we're instilling in our kids to keep them stuck. And if we want to raise them to become mentally strong adults, sometimes just giving up some of these really common practices that aren't helping kids can be the key to helping them build their own mental muscle.
That's really interesting, because I've always had a bit of an issue with this idea in our culture of always trying to work on our weakness. But you're not saying work on your weakness. You're saying ditch a bad habit, which is so different. And I, as you were talking about it, I was envisioning my own life and seeing exactly what you were saying, instances where I wanted to reach a goal and there was just a bad habit standing in my way. You know, lately I've been doing some health things, and I realized I had gotten in the habit of eating too much, because that was like the one time in my day that I told myself, like, that was okay. I could not be doing something else. I could not be trying to accomplish something. I could not be working. I could not be taking care of my family, because I'm eating and we all have to eat. But that's just
right.
A terrible mental thought. That's just a bad habit. And it really hasn't been that hard to change that once I realized what was going on. So let's take that into the parenting realm, because Judy and I were so enjoying your book, and you threw out there, you detail 13 bad habits for parents. And obviously we can't go through all of that today. So we thought we would kind of talk about the one that really captured both Judy and I. And that was that the bad habit was they don't condone a victim mentality. And I think that we need to first start out by having you share with us a little bit about, like, what does a victim mentality look like in our kids?
There could be a lot of things. So for one, if you have a kid who always focuses on the negative, maybe you say, how was your day at school? And 9 good things happened, but there was that one bad thing. So your child comes home and says, you know, the teacher picked on me again today, or I didn't have anybody to play with at recess. And sometimes it's about helplessness too. So if your child says, I went outside for recess and nobody played with me, but at the same time, they didn't invite any of the other kids to play with them, or kids who say, I just don't understand math, but then they don't take any steps to problem solve, to say, how can I get help with that? Can I ask my teacher? Can I ask somebody else to help me? Can I spend more time studying? And it's not the kid's fault. Sometimes it's a learned habit that they just say, oh, I'm helpless. And sometimes it's caused by our parenting habits. We rescue them. We swoop in and do things for them. And so it's important for them to learn, oh, okay, if I have a problem, I can solve it. And we have to teach them problem solving skills. And sometimes it's when kids host pity parties too, that kids with a victim mentality, when something bad happens, they didn't get invited to a birthday party, then they stay home and sulk and say, this is horrible and awful. And suddenly they start thinking things like, nobody likes me, this will never get any better. And it's distorted, it's exaggerated, but it really allows them to start thinking the entire world is out to get them. And sometimes it's all about seeking sympathy too, that kids will tell everybody, like, this really horrible thing happened to me, because it becomes a way to get attention. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's not good attention. It's hard to be friends with somebody who always wants to have sympathy, or a child who always wants their parents to feel sorry for them affects the relationship. So there's definitely warning signs to look for. If your child's always negative, they seem to be hosting a lot of pity parties, if they are helpless, they don't attempt to solve any problems, or they misinterpret events too, that they sometimes think everything is about them, which is partly developmentally appropriate at different stages. But at the same time, if your child thinks, nobody talked to me today, so therefore nobody in the whole world likes me, or my friend didn't call me today because everybody hates me, instead of thinking, well, my friend didn't call because maybe she's busy, they start to think everything's about me and it's all because everybody hates me or nobody likes me. And so it's really important just to be on the lookout for that. If your child is overly negative, or your child always feels sorry for himself, or seems to be getting attention for how bad his life is, then it's something that you want to intervene and make sure that you aren't condoning that victim mentality.
I want to like dig in there a little bit, because as you say this, what is normal behavior developmentally versus, you know, something to be concerned about and need to change, what can we do to know the difference between those two things? And once we do, how do we kind of nip it in the bud if it is just this attention getting thing, or that I'm feeling so sorry for myself? Is it just over time we change what we do, or is there some concrete things as parents that we can actually put into play to change those bad habits?
There's definitely a lot of things that as a parent you can do. So to figure out, you know, sometimes kids will go through phases where they do believe everything's about them. And so one thing is, let's say your child says, gosh, I called my friend today to invite her over, but she didn't call me back because she's mad at me and she hates me. Then you simply ask, well, what else could it be? Is there another answer? Maybe she's busy. Maybe she's gone somewhere. Maybe she didn't get the message. There's 101 reasons why she didn't call you back. That's one of them, that she's mad at you. What are 99 other reasons or 100 other reasons why she didn't call you? And to just open it up to more of those conversations. And over time, you should see your child learn how to do that for herself so that she's eventually not always assuming everything's about her. And also when your child says something like, oh, my day was terrible and awful. If every day when you say, how was your day at school, you hear all the negative things. Sometimes you have to go after the good. And you say, first, I want to hear what was the best part of your day today? And it can just kind of shift your child's focus and to start paying attention to the good stuff that went on. And also how much attention you give to the bad stuff. Certainly you want to validate your child's feelings and say, gosh, that sounds like it was terrible. But at the same time, you don't want to shower them with tons of attention. If you always talk about how your child's teacher is mean, how your child's teacher singles them out, how the teacher's always picking on your child, it will make it so that's what your child focuses on. So you also want to focus on the other stuff too and make sure that you're giving them plenty of attention for saying, gosh, you tried hard, or I really like the way that you kept studying, or I'm so proud of you that in that game today when you missed the goal, you still got right back in there. Focus on that stuff more than you do just the bad stuff.
I like that example, because I think sometimes as parents, if we have a kid who's maybe stuck in that negativity loop or whatever, and you said, you know, they come home from school or you're having dinner or it's evening and we've already had a long day and we're worn out. And I know that for me, when I just hear negative, 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 and you know, this was bad and that was terrible and I can't. And after a while you get frustrated and then you're not in a good space. So by being able to hop in early and go, you know, I'm sorry that happened to you. It sounds like that was unpleasant. Was there anything good that happened? I think that also helps us to kind of stop our own emotional downward spiral.
Yes, absolutely. Kind of just flipping the switch and knowing that, yes, we all have bad days and tough things definitely happen. But at the same time, I hope at least one good thing happened today. Let's focus on that. And it just can help kids develop a more positive mindset, so they know, okay, maybe nobody played with me at recess, but I got a B on my spelling test. That's great. And for them to know that you can choose to focus on the good. And also, you know, to help them focus on what they can control. So when your child says, you know, tomorrow at school, I have to give a presentation. It's going to be dreadful and horrible, and I don't want to go. Then you can also then talk about, well, what can you do? You can practice. You can prepare. You can do the best that you can. But those are the things you can control. When you help kids sort of figure that out, that, all right, I can't control what the teacher says, I can't control what the other kids do, but I do have some control. I'm in control of how I think, how I feel, how I behave, and I can choose to make it the best day that I can. And I think sometimes too, when kids go through hard times, we tend to cut them a lot of slack, and sometimes too much slack. So I've worked in my therapy office with parents who have maybe gone through a divorce, and the parents feel really bad about the divorce. And so as a result, maybe it's 5 years later, they're still treating their child like their child's a victim of horrible circumstances. And, you know, he shouldn't have to clean his room because we got divorced, or it's okay that his grades slid and he doesn't do homework because he's still really upset about the divorce. And as a foster parent, it's something that I've struggled with too. The kids who come into my home, have really gone through traumatic experiences, but if I raise them like they're victims, I'm afraid that when they turn 18 and they go out in the real world, they're going to use that as an excuse in life to say, I had a horrible childhood, so therefore I shouldn't have to get a job or I can't go to college. And I don't want any of them to feel like that. I want them to know you went through hard times, but that still means you're a strong person and you can still go out there and do all of these great things in life. It's all about the choices that you make.
That statement that you just said is so powerful, truly, because I think that so often when bad things happen, it's something that we carry through our lives. So as a parent, I'm sitting here going, when things happen, because life happens, how do I make sure to get that message to my child that yes, things happen, but it is not an excuse or it's not a way to get out of being responsible?
Right.
I just see it so often in our culture. That's the way. It becomes the self-talk. It becomes everything that you've been saying. It's that mentality, that mental muscle, and they're exercising it in such a negative way. And as parents, we can help shift that.
Yes, yes. And it's just really about asking your child. So when your child says, nobody likes me, or my teacher picks on me, to then ask the question, what are you going to do about it? And to just empower kids to know that they have choices. And that's not to say you don't have to get in there and do something. If your child's being bullied, he might need your help to make it stop. Or if your child is being victimized by the teacher, you may need to go in and advocate. But at the same time, we want to teach kids, how do you advocate for yourself and do it appropriately? And this is sort of an advanced social skill, but I think the sooner we start talking to kids about it, the better off that they'll be. And there's an exercise in my book called Speak Up or Shut Up. And it's really about teaching kids, when do you speak up to somebody and say, hey, that's not okay, versus when do you just take it? So for example, if a child's being mean to you on the playground, you should speak up and say, hey, that's not okay. But at the same time, if you're in the baseball game and the umpire calls a strike and you think it was a ball, you probably shouldn't turn around and argue with the umpire. And it's really just about teaching kids some of those social nuances that, yes, there are times when you absolutely should speak up for yourself, but there's also times where it's best to just be quiet and know that it's okay and you can handle it. And I think it's all about giving kids examples and about talking about the examples in your own life. So if you see something terrible happening and you choose to step in, then you have a conversation with your child that says, gosh, when these two people were arguing and somebody started calling each other names, I said, that's not okay. But at the same time, maybe an elderly person cuts in front of you at the grocery store and you don't say anything because you're okay with that. So then you have a conversation with your child that says, you know, I didn't speak up today because it was okay for that person to go in front of us and why it was okay. And you explain those nuances to them to know that you don't see yourself as a victim, that you're willing to speak up when it's important, but you also understand that you don't have to argue with everybody or advocate all the time.
And those nuances is interesting too, because you told us, you know, empower our kids by letting them know they have choices and then ask them, you know, what are you going to do about that? And that phrase really struck me because it's powerful, it's teaching, but it doesn't preclude them getting our help. Because one of the things they can do about that is say, I'm going to ask you to go talk to my teacher, or I'm going to ask you to help me figure this out, or I'm going to ask you to whatever they want us to do. And as they get into those teen years and those young adult years, I love this phrase because it gives them a chance essentially to also tell us to butt out. There have been many times where there are things that I would have thought my kids would have wanted or needed my help, or it was just my first instinct to jump in, but something else happened. Either they took care of it first, or sometimes like at home, they'll just look at me and go, I got this, Mom, you know, back off. I'm good. I've already got this taken care of. And using that phrase, I mean, we can start when they're little and go, well, what can you do about this? What are your choices? And start helping them outline choices. And if we didn't start when they're little, wherever they're at, we can go with this. It's so flexible. It's like one phrase. That's all I have to remember is go, well, what can you do about that? Or what are you going to do about that?
Right. Because I think, you know, when it's, your child's 4 years old and it's raining out and you can't go to the playground and your child says, you know, this isn't fair, I want to go to the playground. Now you can say, well, what can you do about that? Okay. And you sit down and you help them. You could play with your Legos. You could go play with a doll. You could go play with your sister. And then say, now, which one do you want to do about it? And you help them come up with those options, but then it's up to them to choose. And then as they get older, they can start doing that for themselves. Or when you have a teenager who says, I have this problem, and you can say, well, what do you think you're going to do about it? And maybe your teenager, like you say, wants your help, but at the same time, maybe they're just complaining. They're not telling you this because they want you to swoop in and fix it. They're just putting you in the loop. They want you to know, this is what I'm going through. And that's a great thing too. And then for them to be able to make their own decisions about, all right, what do I can't control what just happened or what's about to happen, but I am in control of my behavior. So I'm going to make a choice and here's my options.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's what you're saying is so great because it shows that whole mentally strong piece. So often, even as adults, we expect the people in our lives to get us and understand what we need in any moment, you know, and speak to us in a way that makes us feel good about ourselves. But the reality is, if we want to be mentally strong, we have to be able to ask for what we need and, like you said, make those choices in a healthy way and advocate for ourselves and those needs. It's just such a simple thing, but so complicated at the same time. And you giving us that phrase, it can be used from the time they're toddlers all the way up till now as an adult. I can use that even in my self-talk.
Right. And I think just raising a child who's willing to ask for help can be huge. I can't tell you how many kids have come into my office struggling with anxiety and depression when they're teenagers because they got really behind on their homework. They didn't dare tell anybody. It just kept piling it up. They got overwhelmed and they never asked for help. Whereas if they would have just asked for help 2 weeks in when they were really struggling, they probably could have got some assistance and prevented them from failing all of their classes. And I think for parents to just recognize that, you have a child who can ask for help at appropriate times. At the same time, you don't want a kid who says help every time they're frustrated. And to find that balance of when do they really need help? When do they need me to do this? And how do I teach them skills so that they'll need less help over time? As good parents, you should be working yourself out of a job. But mm-hmm. that by the time they're teenagers, they really don't need you nearly as much anymore. And that by the time they're adults, those calls get fewer and further between where they actually need you to do something as compared to when they're little and you have to do everything for them. But that it's just a good idea to just keep thinking, how do I back off a little bit more as your child grows up so that your child can ask for help at more appropriate times. And help might not necessarily mean doing it for them. If your child's having a problem, it might just be coaching your child about how to do it himself or helping your child come up with a plan of how they're going to solve the problem. It might be, okay, you're going to talk to your teacher. And if that doesn't work, I'll talk to your teacher, but let's have you do it first. And here's how you could do it. And you might go through the steps. You might role model it and coach your child. What do you say? How do you say it? And then you're empowering them to do it on their own.
So Amy, is there one, if you had to go back and say, is there one tip that a parent should do differently? What would that be?
Oh, good question. I think could be as simple as labeling your child's feelings. You know, when they've done studies on kids, once they get to college, kids will say, I was academically prepared for school, but I wasn't emotionally prepared to deal with things on my own. I couldn't deal with being sad or anxious or worried or lonely. I just don't know how to deal with it. So 60% of college kids say, I wish my parents would have focused more on this. So I think from a young age, just teaching kids about feelings. Label those words, say sad, say angry, say anxious in your everyday conversations and talk about your feelings and talk about their feelings and then help them know once you label it, it kind of takes some of the sting out of it. It's not bad to be sad. It's not a horrible thing to be angry. Those feelings are all good. It's what you do with those feelings and then give kids coping skills to deal with their emotions when they feel uncomfortable.
So these ideas, when I think of them from doing when the kids are little, it just seems like this great natural progression. Is there anything we would do differently if we're starting this now with a teenager, if we haven't been labeling their feelings, if we haven't been even discussing feelings, if, you know, every feeling is coming out as frustration and anger, or, you know, or every feeling is turning into, you know, sadness and tears. Is there something different that we would do with our teens, or something, a way to introduce this idea to them? Because they don't always take it real well when we change our parenting when they're older.
Right. Well, you know, I think it's never too late to start, that you can start building mental muscle at any age. And you can have conversations pretty upfront with a teenager that says, you know, I've been thinking, and I'm working on my own mental strength, and I think it's great for us to do this as a family. Similar to the way if you started a new health plan, if you decided, all right, we didn't make exercise a big enough priority in our life, I want to do it now. Being a good role model is really helpful. And then to say, how do we do this as a family? And so for your teenager, you might just start incorporating things and saying, I think it's so important. We haven't done a very good job of talking about feelings before, but I think we should start now. Or we haven't done a very good job of changing the way we think. When we think everybody's out to get us, we just stay stuck in that. But I think this is a better idea. Let's try doing this. You can just be upfront that says, this is what I'm going to do. And then show your child the benefits, but most importantly, to be a good role model as an adult, because we know kids will do as you do, not necessarily just what you say. But even if your child's 17, you can start incorporating this stuff now and still help them in their future, for sure.
I like that a lot, because that also, for me, it takes the pressure off, because you're not telling me I need to get them to do it. What I heard you say was have a conversation with them, you know, introduce your thoughts. I think we haven't done this very well, or I'm really struggling with that. This is what I'm going to do about it. And then just go do it. You didn't tell me I had to have them come up with a plan or make them do it. I just need to do it. And if it's something, you know, maybe that you use an example of, you know, exercise, and we're also talking about emotions and feelings. So maybe something I'm going to do is I'm going to go to a yoga class. I can invite them to come with me, but don't try to manipulate or push them into doing it, right?
Absolutely. Once they get to be teenagers, if you start saying you have to do this, it'll 100% backfire on you. But you can say, this is my house, this is my rules, this is how we do things. I'm going to start doing things a little bit differently. You can come along for the ride, for sure. And if you get tons of resistance, again, it's not about necessarily changing your kid, it's about changing yourself. So as a parent, instead of saying, I'm going to give in every time my child whines about something, or when my child tries to make me feel guilty, I'm going to change my parenting style. It's all about the way that you interact with your kid, your parenting habits that affect your kids as they grow up. So you can, it's never too late to change your parenting habits, and it will rub off on your kids for sure.
That is fantastic. I love it.
I'm going to wrap us up because we are running out of time here. So just some of our high points today. Where we started out talking about this idea of bad habits, because essentially that's what some of our parenting is. You know, we have some parenting practices, which we might've done with the best of intentions, but we've discovered that they were bad habits. So when we're stuck, or when something's happening in our life, yes, we want to build on our strengths, but we also want to look and go, are there bad habits that are holding me back? And so we can get rid of those. And one of the bad habits, one of the problems that can come into our parenting, is allowing our child, and maybe us or our family, to live with a victim mentality. And that shows up when our kid is always focused on the negative, they're always feeling helpless, they throw a lot of pity parties, we see them misinterpreting events. Those can be signals that our child is living in this victim mentality, that they don't have control over their life and what's happening. So we can open up conversations with them. If they're stuck in an all about me, and, you know, she did this and he said that and this happened to me, because we can counter that with, well, why else would he or she have done this or said this, and help them to start thinking differently. If everything is negative, we can ask them, what was the good thing that happened today? And acknowledge the feelings they have about the bad thing. You know, that was really tough, but don't dwell there. Move on to, tell me something positive. We can empower our kids by letting them know that they have choices. And the question that Judy and I both loved was, what are you going to do about that? And that helps us to start a conversation where we're teaching our kids to have power over their own life. And that really would be key to not being a victim, is when we feel like we have power over our life and what's going on. And then the number one thing as parents, Amy, that you said that we would do or should do if we were going to do one thing, is to label our kids' feelings and show them how to manage them. Like, all the feelings are good, but it's what you do about it that matters. And no matter what we've done in the past, it is not too late. We can change our parenting anytime we want. Just introduce the conversation, tell them what we're going to do, and go do it. Because it isn't about changing our child, it's about changing our parenting habits. Amy, this was really great, and I know people are going to be interested and want more. Where can they go to get your books and get more information from you?
And the best place to go is my website, which is Amy Morin, LCSW, is in licensedclinicalsocialworker.com.
And we, of course, always have on the mightyparentingpodcast.com in our show notes for today's show. We will, of course, have a link right to her website, as well as her book, 13 Things Mentally Strong Parents Don't Do.
Wow, Amy, this is such an interesting discussion this morning. And for those of you who have been following us for a little while, we have a little bit of announcement. We have been on a Making It Better kick, both online and within our show, and incorporating all of your feedback. And that includes your requests for a tweak in our show format. So drumroll please. We are actually switching it up and listening to what your suggestions told us, and that is to stay focused on the interview portion of the show. So what that means is that Real Talk, which usually happens at this time in the whole show format, Real Talk is going to have a new home soon, and we will let you know as we roll that out and bring you more of what you need. We just want to thank you for joining us today and every day, either here on our show or on social media in our Facebook group or on our page. And we just want to say you are a mighty parent, and we get what you're going through as you raise your teens and parent your 20-somethings, and are honored that you're sharing our space with us each and every week. Pop over to mightyparenting.com and get what you need. Until next time, this is Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler wishing you the best of days.